So we'll talk about compassion today, karuna. They say that there's nothing more important for purifying negative karma than compassion. There was a time long ago when the Abhidharma teachings had been challenged on three occasions, and they say that they were about to disappear. And remember, the Abhidharma is this, sometimes called Buddhist psychology. And so there was a woman at that time when the Abhidharma was about to disappear, and she was worried about this. She was a nun at the time, and she realized that as a woman she couldn't do anything about it, so she would have to marry and hopefully have sons, and then get her sons to do something about it. So her name was Praksha Shila, and so she found a husband, she got married, and she had two sons, Asanga and Vasubandhu, who both eventually became great teachers. When they came of age, they said to their mother, "What is our father's work?" Because normally in India, you do what your father did. And so she says, "Your work is not his work." And then she told them that they should go and study the Dharma. And so Asanga went to a mountain called Kukutapada. And he began to do the practice of Maitreya, the Buddha of the future. And so he went into this cave and did intensive practice, and he was hoping to have some kind of vision of Maitreya and get some kind of direct instructions. And he was in retreat for 6 years, and nothing had happened. He hadn't even had one auspicious dream. So he decided to leave retreat, and he came out, and he found, he was walking along and coming out of his cave, and he saw this man who was rubbing an enormous bar of iron. And he said, "What are you doing?" And the man said, "I'm making a needle." So he's just rubbing this iron, and so he thought, that's incredible. I mean, that guy's just sitting there doing that, and if ordinary people can make that kind of effort for an ordinary purpose, I really haven't put that much energy and effort into my practice. So I think I should go back. And so he goes back into retreat again, and he practiced for 3 more years, and still there's no sign. And he's left. He leaves again. He leaves retreat again, and he's certain that there will be that he'll never get anywhere, and that he might as well just give up. So he's walking along, and he sees this man up on top of this big boulder, and in front of the boulder is this little house. And so he says to him, "What are you doing?" And he's dipping his feather in water, and he's putting it up like this on the boulder. And the man says, I'm going to reduce the size of the boulder so that the sun will shine on my house." And so once again he thinks, "Wow, that's really going to take a long time." And if he would do this, that for such a worldly purpose, then I really haven't spent that much time doing my thing, my meditation. And so he returns for 3 more years. Nothing. So that's been 12 years. And so he leaves his retreat and he's walking along the road and he sees this dog. And the dog has two crippled hind legs, so she is dragging her legs. And because she's been dragging her legs, her legs have gotten infected. And so she has maggots crawling around in these sores. And so he thinks, wow, that dog is really suffering. I'd like to try to help her. And so he tries to approach her, and she kind of snarls at him and very angry, but he just feels this incredible compassion, so he's willing to continue to try to help her. And so he thinks, if I pick those maggots out of her wounds, then I'm going to kill them. And so the best thing I could do would be to lick them out with my tongue. And so he leans down and he sticks out his tongue and leans over and goes toward her legs, and then suddenly his head hits the ground. And then he kind of looks up, and then in the sky in front of him is Maitreya. Mm-hmm. And so then he seeing Maitreya has this beautiful halo of light around him, and he looks at him and he said, why were you so unkind? You know, I was there praying, practicing for 12 years. You didn't give me anything, not even a little dream or any kind of encouragement. And so Maitreya says, it is not true. I have shown myself. I was there as the man with the iron. I was there in the person with the feather. It's you that hadn't purified your karma enough to see me. But in this act of compassion, where you actually had a genuine experience of compassion for this dog, that broke through your karma to the point where you could see me. So all this time he had been accumulating merit, and Maitreya had been appearing and showing him that he hadn't put in enough effort with all these different examples. Mm-hmm. And so he says, you know, that finally your obscurations have been removed, but others will not see me as you see me. And so he says, okay, well, put me on your shoulder and go to town, and then you'll see. So he goes to town with Maitreya on his shoulder, and he's walking around, and he's kind of like going up to people, kind of like, and everyone is just treating him normally, and they're not seeing Maitreya. So he walks around. Finally, he's about to leave the village, realizing that what Maitreya has said is true, that people can't see him because of their own obscuration. And then there's an old woman that comes up to him and says, what are you doing with that bitch on your shoulder? A dog, you know. Yeah. And so... So the moral of the story is that compassion is very important, and compassion can clear your karma in ways that even years and years of meditation can't. And that this woman had less karmic obscurations than the rest of the people who couldn't see anything, but they still hadn't cleared enough so that she would actually see Maitreya. So the image here of this immeasurable is the image of an armless mother seeing her child washed away by a river. So that kind of anguish and desire to help, seeing suffering. So feeling is connected to all beings as a mother does to her child, and with the feeling of wanting to help. So it's in the same way that sentient beings are carried away by the river of suffering, then also we need to feel that the situation is that intense and that we want to help that intensely as well. There's a story of Milarepa, who was meditating in the Garuda forest cave in the Chung Valley. And one day he came back to his cave from being outside, and he found these five atsaras with big eyes, these kind of Indian-like looking beings. And so they were really scary and kind of attacking him. And so he then prayed to his teacher, Marpa, to help him. He couldn't get into his cave. They were in there. Prayed to Marpa, and he had incredible devotion for Marpa. Incredible. And nothing happened. They were still there. So I thought, well, maybe I should try my yidam, my deity. So he tries his yidam. And the asaras are getting happier and happier, and they're wrecking his shrine and, you know, messing up everything in his cave, the little that he has in his cave. And then he decides to try some wrathful mantras, like subjugating them. And that makes them even happier. It doesn't get better at all. And so then suddenly he remembers that Marpa had taught him the nature of mind practice. And so Marpa had said the mind is empty and radiant, and to believe in any external phenomena is a grave mistake. Mm-hmm. And so he then recognizes the nature of mind, and he then offers them his body. And so it's very similar to the story of Machik and the tree and the whole principle of feeding your demons. And he says, when he offers it, let this merit become the seed of their great compassion, combined with nourishment of innate wisdom. Free all demons forever from malignance and bitterness. May you become very compassionate, lenient, and kind. I now dedicate this merit as boon to all sentient beings for their perfect happiness, goodness, and contentment. And then they become contrite. They become allies. And then the flesh-eating Dakini, who's been behind this manifestation, says that she came to test him. And she says, generally speaking, all outer hindrances created by demons depend on one's inner clinging. Hereafter, whenever you run into danger or your mind runs wild, you should meditate on mind essence in an effortless manner. You will surely then conquer all hindrances. So this is a story about the combination of compassion and nature of mind. And I think this is really what we're doing in this piece of the retreat, is we're really looking at nature of mind in the Prajnaparamita practice. And at the same time, we're practicing compassion, which was also part of this offering, this feeding, even that which attacks us and seems so real and frightening, to turn towards it with love and compassion instead of turning away from it in the same way that the Buddha did. Remember with the drunk war elephant that's running down the street towards him? He meets it with this cloud of love and compassion. And then the elephant stops in its tracks and bends down and picks the soil up from the feet of the Buddha and puts it on his head and then turns around and walks back. So compassion is very powerful. It's incredibly powerful. We think sometimes compassion is sort of weak and kind of wimpy in some way. But it's very powerful. So the meditation on Karuna, in this meditation, you imagine, think about how beings are so tormented by suffering. And, you know, there are beings who are tormented by physical conditions, and then there are beings who are tormented by mental demons. And you think of wishing them to be free of it. And then imagine all the beings who are awaiting execution. You know, like all the cows that are there, you know, in those feedlots, or even when they start, you know, pushing them in toward where they're going to get killed, or the pigs. I heard a story about this bull in Switzerland. This place where I teach in Switzerland, Felsentor. They are also an animal refuge, and so they have a bull there. And the story with this bull is that it was going into the chute toward execution, and the execution, or the, you know, the where they killed the animals, was on the second floor of this building. And this bull somehow broke out of the chute and jumped out the window of this building and ran away. And then somehow got away and was, you know, gone, like, you know, lost. You know, they couldn't find it for a few days. And then they found him and they were going to take him back and execute him. But the story got out in the paper. And so this the owner of this place, Vanya, who's an animal activist, bought him. Uh-huh. And then now he's there. Uh-huh. So it's not like these animals don't know what's happening. They know, the pigs know, and yet they're helpless, you know. That bull was very unusual.
Yeah, strong.
Most of them, you know, they're completely helpless. Mm. And so in developing compassion, it's good to think about those situations. And humans that are in that kind of situation, too, where they have been captured, or political prisoners who have spoken out for some reason, and they're doomed to execution with no trial and no human rights. And these situations are actually happening right now. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Just, if anyone wants help with visualizing that, the last 5 days of a person's life on death row, my colleague has worked there for 10.5 years. Every person, the first 5 days, or the 5 days before, their hair went gray. Mm. They became goth. Mm. It doesn't matter who you are. Mm. You could be very hopeful up until that last 5 days. Mm.
Wow. Thank you. So if we can identify with these beings as being our own mother, They're not distant, they're actually close to us, and, you know, or someone that we love, if our mother isn't our most dear person, someone else that we love, that these beings are not distant. And this is something that we also practice when we did the equanimity, to feel this closeness. And to feel that this is a result of karma, and to meditate with compassion for all beings who are creating causes of suffering. Of course, it's the karma also of the executors. It's this sort of karmic web that everyone is caught in. And so, train in this, in one being at a time, and think about increasing that compassion that you feel, that real, genuine, heartful desire to benefit beings. And then think about animals that are peacefully grazing, like around here there's a lot of hunting, and so there's these beautiful deer and elk in the forest, and they're just peacefully living there, and then suddenly somebody shoots them all of a sudden. So the development of compassion is really, it's different than loving kindness in that if we're thinking about beings that are less fortunate than ourselves, and we're still developing compassion, but it's that quality of compassion for those who are less fortunate than ourselves. And this is the practice of Tonglen. The practice of Tonglen comes with this one of the Four Immeasurable. And have any of you not heard of Tonglen? Raise your hands if you haven't. You don't know Tonglen. It's become very famous. And I thought we could do something a little different with this in terms of our practice. Because this is something you can also do with people who are dying or sick or suffering in some way. You can sit with them and do Tonglen. And so, what you do essentially is you breathe in. You begin first with an experience or flashing on emptiness, and then you breathe in their suffering into your heart, and then you breathe out love and compassion. So you breathe in this kind of sticky, clunky, their suffering. You flash on compassion at the moment of the turnaround, flash on compassion and emptiness, and then breathe out love and compassion. And so when you do this, it's like you are actually willing to take on their suffering. It's that kind of willingness to take it on, like you care enough so you would carry that load for them.
Mm-hmm. So how would you protect yourself on not in turn manifesting that illness or that suffering in your own
through life? Emptiness. They say shunyata is the supreme protection. Mm-hmm. So that's why you base it in emptiness. But you also are actually practicing being willing to take it. Mm. And they say that that's sometimes how great beings die or get sick, because they do take on the karma of others. So it's a willingness to do that. I remember when I first heard about it, I was like, no way. That's dangerous. But, you know, I think part of the bodhisattva path is courage. And courage in the face of suffering. And, you know, if you think of Christ, who was a great bodhisattva, and that whole idea of being willing to take on the suffering of humanity. So Tonglen is based on that.
I think I heard you explain it different than I've heard it before. Did you say to generate into flesh and compassion first, then emptiness? Or are you combining compassion and emptiness as one thing?
One
or
thing.
Or is it just flesh and compassion and bodhicitta and then...
No. Yeah, you begin with both compassion and emptiness, but you so this whole thing is taking place in the fabric of emptiness. And that's something that isn't always taught when people teach Tonglen. But remember, this is Mahayana. So we've already in some way developed an understanding of the lack of inherent existence of self and phenomena. And so our actions are taking place within that understanding.
It's a very question, but you just said the understanding of emptiness is the precondition to do this practice. Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that great practitioners that are so courageous and willing, open to the suffering of others. It sounded like in a way that would accumulate that.
They would be willing to do it, to take it.
Like Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they said, you know, when the Karmapa had cancer, and people were like, well, why would such a great being die of cancer? And that's why.
So there is a possibility to do Tonglen. It's a very stupid question, but for me, it's without the willingness.
<Mm-mm>. No. The point of Tonglen is to remove territoriality and to realize that we can take more suffering and give up more good, mm-hmm. that we are bigger, you know, than we think we are. And, you know, there's always, I mean, the whole structure of the ego is happiness for oneself and not caring about others, really. And so the courage and the willingness to take it on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So suppose you haven't like really mastered the emptiness thing.
Then you're still willing to do it.
Okay.
Like you pray, it says, may many beings are suffering like me. May all their suffering mature in me so that they shall be free of it and can enjoy happiness. You practice.
Yeah.
You practice that, and you know, and that's why it's kind of a surreal practice. You know, it's not kind of what you want to do. It's not what you're used to doing. Okay, so I wanted to start this now because I want you to have an experience. And so the way that I was thinking to try this is to do it in pairs and in dyads, and to have one person lie down, and then to tell somebody, to tell the other person something, some kind of suffering that you have, like, you know, I'm suffering because of sadness about my children, or I'm suffering because of this pain in my body, or I have this illness, or, you know, whatever it is that you have as a suffering. It's not a long story. It's not like, and then he said this, and then, you know. it's just like something. And then, so maybe, can you try this with me, Carl? Whatever, could be anything. Whatever's up. So you lie here, and you bring your pillow, and you put that under your head. And so I would sit here, and I would take her hand, and then she would tell me whatever it is. You don't have to tell me right now. But
I know myself.
Anyway, so then I would generate my motivation, and I would generate compassion and emptiness. The feeling of, you know, that she's there, I'm here, but on some level, there's no one here, there's no one there, and there's nothing between going on between us. It's all empty of what I think is there. So I have that, just a moment of that. And then I begin, and I breathe in her suffering. I flash on emptiness and compassion, and then I breathe out love and compassion. And so I do that for a while for her, and then I expand it and expand it and expand it until it includes all beings and it's immeasurable. So I thought it would be nice to have this experience, because this is something you can really do for people, and also so you can experience sort of giving it and also receiving it. So we'll try both positions. You know, that then, you know, we'll do it for about 15 minutes each, and then we'll change places. We'll each have the experience. And there's not going to be a lot of discussion or anything. It's just, you know, have this experience. Does that sound good? Have the courage? I don't think you'll get any dread diseases. Unless you're very, very good at this.